Hi, everybody. It's Linda Formicelli, the other Den Mother here in the Freelance Writers Den, the learning and support community for writers looking to grow their earnings fast. Today's Den meeting is on writing for trade magazines, and my guest is Connie Gentry. Connie spent more than 16 years in business-to-business publishing, mostly writing and editing for business audiences who are serving consumers. Right now, she's the editor of SSR Magazine, which stands for Full Service Restaurant, where she finds the operational complexities of full-service restaurants fascinating, but she enjoys most is sharing the stories, insights, and visions of people throughout the industry. Before joining FSR last year, Connie spent 10 years as senior editor at a B2B magazine based in Manhattan. So what's going to happen is Connie is going to talk about all about trades. I'll do some announcements, and we'll take some questions. We're going to get to the questions on the Den first, and then we'll take questions that you can post in the Q&A there on the website you should be looking at. Then Connie's going to talk about the sort of nitty-gritty about breaking into trades, and then we're going to take some more questions and wrap it up by four. So, Connie, it's all you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Linda, and thank you, writers, for jumping in and listening to us today. I'm looking forward to talking about this. Writing for trades is actually a passion of mine. I have loved it for years. I want to start out by talking a little bit about what trades are, because I know back in the dark ages when I started doing this, I really didn't know exactly what the trades were. So I want to just define them a little bit for everyone. Pretty much a trade publication is going to be geared to people in a specific industry, and the content is going to be focused on that business or that industry, okay? Often the editorial is going to be news-focused, or it's going to be about trends or current events. It's going to be helping the readers and the audience really stay abreast of where their industry is headed and the things, the best practices that they can incorporate. Typically, the circulation on a trade magazine, it's always controlled, and it's a non-paid circulation. The revenue for a trade magazine is generated by the ads in the magazine. Sometimes it's generated by memberships in an association or something. I'll talk about that in a minute. But there typically are not paid subscriptions to a trade publication. It is a qualified circulation that is controlled by the publisher, okay? So the professionals reading the magazine have to ask for it. They have to share their title, and then you can look and know who you're talking to, okay? Now, I wanted to share a minute about how I got into writing about trades, because I think the way I did it is probably not the best way, although it's worked really nice for me, but I got into it purely opportunistically. My background was in B2B communications, and in working with different businesses, helping them communicate their brand and talking about all their business messages, I would run into people who didn't want to do the typical PR route, but they would suggest, gee, this is a trend going on. Wouldn't it be great if the trade publications covered these stories? So I would then say, this is something I see going on, and I have all these connections with these businesses. Let me put together a story for the leading trade magazine in that industry. And specifically when I started out, it was back in, 80s, 90s, and global sourcing was emerging and supply chain was the big topic. And that's kind of where I got started, that and also talking about information technology, which was kind of a new buzzword then in a lot of industries. Anyway, it was a very opportunistic play. In hindsight, and what I would encourage any of you to do, is to be more intentional about the way you start writing for trades and actually say, gosh, this is the area of expertise I want to develop, and in this area of expertise, these are the trade publications that I want to go after. And I think then you'll end up where I have finally arrived, which is writing for publications that you really love or editing for a publication that you're really excited about. Okay. Another thing that Linda had suggested I mention to you is the reasons why trades are good for emerging writers as well as for experienced writers. And I'm guessing that among you, there are a lot of folks who are just getting started and maybe haven't written, and then I'm sure there are professional journalists out there who've written much more than I have. But the encouraging thing is that trade publications increasingly rely heavily on freelance contributors or contract writers, okay? If you're an emerging writer, you don't have to be widely published to start writing for a trade publication. Frankly, I don't care so much who all you've written for. I care about the story that you can write for my publication, and that's what I key in on. Also, even if you're an experienced in a particular business or industry, you don't have to be the experienced writer per se or the experienced journalist. Perhaps your background is in marketing, and you've done a lot of writing there, or you've done teaching or communications, and you can leverage any of those skill sets and the knowledge you have about a particular business area and write a very effective story for a trade publication. Another thing I would say is you don't have to be a subject expert to write for a trade. You have to have the curiosity and the vision to identify the people who can speak with expertise on that topic and get those interviews and put together a very well-crafted story. The other great thing in the trade industry is there is tremendous opportunity to develop relationships with trade publications and with trade editors. Let's see. Oh, another thing that I wanted to be sure and mention is some of the ways that trade publications are different from consumer publications. And the primary difference, I think, is the audience and the mindset of the audience. The people who are reading a trade publication are absolutely immersed in that industry. So when you're writing for a trade publication, you're talking to the people who are the leaders in that industry, typically. If you're writing for a consumer publication, a lot of times you're educating the readers and you're taking more of a baseline approach with the story. When you write for a trade, you have to ramp up your familiarity with the topic and you have to be very insightful because you're talking to the people who are very passionate and are totally involved on a day-to-day basis in that industry. So the level that you communicate on is entirely different. The other thing is, regardless of the topic in the trade, whether you're talking about sheep farming or you're talking about microchips or nanotechnology, you're talking to a group of professionals, and you have to approach the story with a very professional tone. And those are some of the ways that the trades are very different than consumer publications.
Thank you. And let me just stop here for 1 second because I just got 2 questions. One says they're static and one says I hear anyone speaking. If anybody could go on the Q&A and just let me know that you can hear us okay, hopefully it's a localized problem and it's not the instant teleseminar or me or Connie. So I'm just going to wait 1 second and see if we get anybody who says they can hear us. And Connie, while I'm waiting for that, I love that you talk about leveraging your expertise in marketing and so on, because that's what I'm always telling people. I mean, I don't have any expertise in implant graphics or restaurants even, and I use my knowledge of marketing and sales to break into trades. Yep,
right.
They can hear me. Okay. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do we think everyone can hear us fine now, Linda?
Yeah, everyone can hear us. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the challenges of trades.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Thank you.
So, you know, there are some challenges, and I think the first one is just a very practical challenge, and that is you can't go get your hands on a trade magazine typically. If you want to write for a consumer publication, you go out to the newsstand, you buy it, you read it, you get very familiar with it. You can't go buy a trade publication. But that should not be a deterrent to writing for trades because I can't imagine a trade magazine that doesn't have a website right now. So you find the website for the publication, and you can always request a copy, although, again, it's a control circulation, so there aren't hundreds of excess copies of any issue sitting around. So the better thing to request might be a link to stories. And you can also go online on the website, look at the media kit, read the editorial calendar. If they have, you know, if there's a PDF of the publication, download it and look at it. That's the same thing as holding the print copy in your hand. The other thing that I would really encourage you to spend time reading is the publisher's audited statement. That's going to tell you the titles that are reading the magazine. And knowing who's reading it is the best research you can do for knowing how to craft your pitch and what kind of story you want to write. It's also going to help you think and talk like the audience. I would encourage you to do as much research as you can on the trade website so that you can see the terminology and the expressions that are prevalent in that particular industry. Another thing that perhaps is a challenge with writing for trades is that all of the trades that I have worked with and when I've been in a senior editor role and an editor capacity, you aren't going to hire a freelance writer who writes for one of your competitors. So if you're out there freelancing, you don't want to pitch. Certainly you wouldn't pitch the same story to competitor magazines. But at the same time, typically you can't even write on an ongoing basis for the trades in the same industry. But you can leverage the same subject across multiple industries. So perhaps you write about sustainability across a number of different trade publications. So your expertise is sustainability, and you're covering a lot of different trades in doing that. I suppose, if I'm going to talk about the challenges of writing for trade magazines, I have to talk about the opportunities as well. And opportunities are just phenomenal. We are always, as editors, so eager to find new talent. The other opportunity is that within a trade magazine, there's just all sorts of content that you can pitch to and write for. There are feature stories. There are always research-based, data-based stories. That's perfect for entering a new industry or establishing yourself in an industry if you're the kind of writer who likes to do research. As you become more established, there's opportunities to do Q&As with the leaders in the industry. And as you move along and you develop a voice for a particular area of expertise or a particular industry, then perhaps you become a columnist, a freelance columnist, or a contract columnist with a trade publication. And I will say, before becoming editor, I did both. I worked as a freelancer. I worked as a contract editor. Of course, the advantage of working as a contract editor is sometimes literally cash flow and also being able to manage your queue and your schedule so that you know when you have deadlines. But frankly, the earnings are pretty comparable. If you're a strong freelancer, I have freelancers who write for me every issue, just like the contract editors do, okay? Another opportunity in writing for trade magazines is you can easily cross over between consumer and trade, and you can leverage some of the stories and the knowledge that you gain writing for consumer magazines to go and delve deeper into the topic for the businesses who are, running that kind of industry. And finally, I would say another opportunity with trade magazines, if you're not entirely committed to doing editorial journalism, is there are always opportunities to write for custom content within the trades. And that's a good way to establish yourself and also earn a living as a freelancer. Linda, would you like me to talk any about some of the maybe misperceptions or the myths around trade magazines?
Yeah, I would love to. I think everybody would love to hear about the myths of trade.
Okay. I think when I started, like I said, I really didn't know what trade magazines were. But there was, maybe a couple of decades ago, there was a little bit of a perception that somehow trades were lesser beings or lower grade or something, not on the same tier as a consumer publication. And I have to tell you that nothing is further from the truth. When you're writing for a trade publication, again, you're talking to the leaders in the industry. Typically, you're talking to the senior decision makers and the C-level executives or the owners and operators of companies. And so you're talking to people who who really know their stuff, and you have to know it that well, too. It's a lot of responsibility for a journalist, but it's also just tremendous. It's fun. It gives you insight into things that are just around the bend, and I always love that. I think there is another myth or perception that, you have to be an expert or you have to be widely published in that industry. And that's just not true. I think the biggest piece of advice I could say is, don't be afraid to write about something new. A perfect example is I recently needed to assign a story, and the story was going to be read by people who really aren't very technical but who needed to understand a new technology. And I asked a freelance writer to do it who didn't know anything about the technology, who'd never written about technology. And I wanted her to do it because I knew she would be bringing the same kind of perspective that the readers would have. So it was more challenging for her. It was a little intimidating, but she ended up doing a really good job with it. I think the readers responded to it really well also. And so don't let the fact that you aren't an expert deter you from taking on some projects or even going after some projects that are a little bit outside of your comfort zone. Another thing, and this is one of my biggest objectives is, trades need to be fun. They don't have to be all dry and technical. They can be creative. They can be witty. And I really encourage any of the freelance writers or contract editors that I work with to develop their voice and to write a fun story when they're putting it together. Everybody likes to be entertained, and even when they're being educated, they want to be entertained. And finally, I will say that trades, there is a myth that trades are pretty much cut and dried, black and white, not a lot of fluff, and a lot of trades are like that. But I'm thrilled that the magazine that I'm editing, FSR, is just incredibly committed to a beautiful presentation, lots of photography, a high-quality design. And when you're writing for a publication like that, it's important as a freelance writer to keep in mind the whole package that you're putting together, that in addition to the words you're writing, that there needs to be some great photography and maybe some sidebars and things like that. And so there's a lot of opportunity for creativity within trade magazines.
Thank you, Connie. This is so interesting. I love writing for trade, so I think everybody's going to get a lot out of this. We're going to go into questions, but first I have a couple of announcements. If you're joining us late, this free call is brought to you by the Freelance Writers Den. Den members enjoy a wealth of benefits, including access to the Junk-Free Job Board, free writer website reviews, weekly live events, supported forums, and all of Carol Tice's past e-courses and live event recordings, including this one, as well as our four-week boot camps, which are $197 for non-members. And if you're interested in knowing what's coming up for Den calls, I have it here. Next week's Den call is how to become a book ghostwriter with Claudia Suzanne. That's followed by book proposals that sell with Jennifer Lawler. I'll be doing that call. She is a good friend of mine, and she actually has been both an editor at an imprint and an agent and a writer who sold 24 books, I think most of them without agents. Then is a call with my Renegade Writer co-author Diana Burrell on developing ideas for magazines. Carol will be taking that call. And then the next call after that is Carol will be talking on the anatomy of a feature article. So we have two coming up on book authoring, and we have two coming up on magazine writing. So we will take some questions, and I want to start in the den, the questions that were left here. And, Connie, tell me what you think. A lot of these questions are about letters of introduction or LOIs, and I know you're going to be talking about that later, and you're going to have some sobering information. So should we come back to the LOI questions after you talk and see if they're already answered?
If you want to, maybe we should do that, since that is something
okay.
that we know everyone wants to hear about and talk about. So, let's talk about that a little bit later.
Okay. And then we have somebody, she says, it is Audrey. She says she wants to break into writing business-oriented publications with a secondary specialty in fashion and beauty. And she does have some experience. She has clips under an assumed name that she doesn't want to use as samples. And she's wondering how she can salad morning position can get started in trade publications.
Okay. So she's got clips under a different name. So she doesn't
use those.
Okay.
They were with Content Mill, so she's afraid to use them. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that it's that different than using content that you've written where you've acted as the ghostwriter for someone else. And because there's a lot of writing, especially within trades, when you're writing for a professional organization that may have its own trade, a lot of times they'll hire you and you will work as the editor or the ghostwriter behind a professional within that industry whose byline goes on the story. And certainly you would include that in your clips. So without going into a lot of detail about why Audrey chose to write under a different name, she could share the previous clips if they were writing that she felt good about. However,
we'll
say that I don't spend time reading what someone wrote in the past unless I have a pitch in front of me that I think I want them to write in the future. So the most important thing you're going to share, no matter who you are, is what story you want to write for me now. And then if that pitch or that introduction to your thought for what might be the next story, if that catches the editor's attention, then they're going to say, okay, give me some samples of your writing. And I had that very situation come up today. I get pitches, a lot of pitches every week. And I got one this morning, and the writer's from Washington, not sure if they're on the phone with this or not, but I liked her pitch. She led with her pitch. I liked the pitch. And I'll say she also had a great website. I'll talk about websites a little bit later in our conversation. But I was able to glance at what she'd done, not read any of her clips per se, but I saw enough of the topics she'd covered to know, yes, her pitch, her topics, they were right on something I would be interested in. So then I went back to her and said, pick your three best samples in this area and send to me to read, okay? So there's a little bit of dialogue before we actually start looking at a clip, I think, and that's one of the important things maybe for anyone out there to understand.
Okay, great, thanks. And I have a really good question from Gabby. She wants to know if she'll have any luck pitching trades if she only has life experience peripherally related to the main topic of the trade pub, so maybe she's a hobbyist in that area of some sort, or maybe used to work in that area or something like that. Do writers with that kind of background typically have a chance? Or
I would say yes, absolutely, as long as they're able to adopt the perspective of the business and the professionals reading the trade publication. I think one of the things we all have to overcome is we're all consumers, so we tend to approach things with that kind of consumer mindset. And so if you've experienced an industry as a consumer or as a hobby or individual, however you want to think of it, that's great and it gives you a very good perspective, but you have to take that perspective and transition it into one that is relevant to the people who are running the industry. So, yes, it can work, as long as you're able to elevate your mindset somewhat.
Okay, great. And I have a really good question from Christine, and I think this is one I get all the time, and I just can't really answer it. It sounds like she's sending queries to trade magazines, but she's not hearing back, and she's not even an acknowledgement that her query was received, and she's wondering if this is to be expected, how long it usually takes, whether she should follow up. I mean, what to do when you send a pitch and you don't hear back?
Oh, and, I am probably one of the guiltiest editors there. Simply, I'm perspective. I would love to answer every single query, but it's just overwhelming sometimes with the volume of pitches that come in. I try to answer. I can tell you, I'm sure everyone out there appreciates the function of deadlines, and so there are some weeks when nothing gets answered. Okay, and so you may not hear back from me for 10 days. And then again, you may hear back from me 10 minutes after you send the pitch. I would encourage you, if you offer a pitch and you don't hear back from the editor, give the editor a week or some time and then go back. Now, if it's a time-sensitive story, then certainly, you know, indicate time sensitivity in the subject line or at the beginning of the email, and certainly check back sooner. But you also do not want to pester an editor because we're a little bit frustrated. And it's not, you know, it's never a personal thing. It's just literally a function of time and being able to get back to everyone. And the other thing I would say is sometimes not hearing, no news is not always bad news. Sometimes the one that I don't immediately respond to is the one that I'm thinking about.
Right. Okay. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so, but feel free to, you know, ping again, you know, give it a couple of days, a week, and then ping again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good. And I have a couple of questions. You mentioned custom content before, and people are wanting to know, what do you mean by custom content for the trades? What does that mean?
Okay. Custom content. It's rather a hybrid, I think, and it means a little bit different with every publisher, but every publisher has custom content. Again, the way trade publications make their money is by selling ads. And sometimes they have special reports that are custom content covers a lot of areas. So sometimes the custom content is a special report that is, say, sponsored by a huge company like an IBM or a General Electric or something, okay? And that particular company isn't necessarily quoted or covered in the content, but all of the content evolves around the kinds of topics that would interest people looking at, you know, the products they have, okay? And it's sponsored by a company. So it's not straight editorial. There is an advertiser in the background of this content. Other times, custom content is literally a pay-to-play. And in those cases, it's very much advertorial, and it's clear to readers, it's clear to the writer, it's clear to everyone that the people who advertised here have the opportunity to put forth their case studies or their customers who are in that industry for interview, okay? And then sometimes custom content is not pay to play. It is where there's ads run on a given topic, and that topic is covered in the content. And it's not, instead of interviewing necessarily the people in the industry who were reading the magazine, you're interviewing the people who supply that industry, okay? But it's not necessarily the people who paid for advertising. But typically vendors who supply the industry aren't quoted in the editorial content so much. Typically it's the people actually working in the industry. Does that help explain what custom content is? It walks a fine line between advertorial and editorial usually.
Right. Okay. Oh, I didn't know that. So that's interesting. Thank you. I think, so we're going to skip all the LOI questions for now because Connie's going to be talking about that soon, and your questions might change once you hear what she has to say. So Connie will give the rest of her talk, and then we will take on some more questions. And Connie is going to talk next about how to get an assignment, which I know you're all excited to hear.
Oh, I think you light candles and say a lot of prayers to get an assignment. But I think the first thing you need to do is you need to identify stories that are going to sell to the publisher. And the stories that are going to sell are the stories that people want to read. And when I, you know, when we started out, you mentioned, Linda, that I said what I love best is sharing the people's stories in the magazine. And I think, you know, when it comes down to it, even though it's businesses, it's still people in the businesses, and you have to tell good stories. And so, you know, to get an assignment, you start out by identifying the stories and the people and, you know, what's going on in the industry that's really interesting. And you do a lot of research. You do a lot of homework. Again, on a specific trade, if you have a specific trade you want to write for, you need to look at that editorial calendar, and you need to look within the publication, do they have departments dedicated to different areas? And typically they will. They'll have the same departments running. I know in FSR we have a design department. We have a technology department. We have sustainability. There's the supply chain often in a lot of different publications. Look at the departments that are there and think about what's, you know, where your story idea fits within the departments that a given trade has and pitch it accordingly. You have to know the trends when you do your research, you know, identify all the trends, but then you have to be able to think with a visionary process. So you're not saying something that's been written over and over for the last 12 months. You know, look ahead with what you're thinking and what you're writing. Look at the people in the industry who are changing the industry, and those are the people you want to talk to, people who are having a big impact and who are thinking way ahead. Now, I think there's this topic of, you know, a letter of introduction versus a pitch, okay? And, you know, I have to say, I always, as an editor and as a freelancer, I always prefer to start with the story, okay, and then get to know everybody I'm working with. So my biggest recommendation is don't spend a lot of time trying to craft that LOI. Spend your time writing a great pitch. And I will say the way I started working with various publishers back when I was freelancing is I started by presenting stories. This is the story idea. And from there, you grow the relationship. And as you move beyond the story and into working together, then you go through the introductions. And I will tell you the way I work as an editor is I'll get a pitch in, and I'll look at the pitch, and then I'll ask for more introduction. If I get a long, lengthy introduction, it's really hard to read through all those. You know, I want to read about the story, and in reading about the story you want to write, I'll be able to see your voice, and I'll be able to see some of your perspective, I'm hoping. And that's what I react to and what I respond to. Let's see, what are some of the things that the pitch needs to include? Of course, it needs to have a strong idea and concept, but it needs to have a lead. The lead in your pitch needs to be as much of a hook and as strong as it will be in your story. And I will say that when I worked as a freelancer, I spent as much time writing and researching and crafting the lead to a pitch as I did to a story. And often the lead to the pitch became the lead to the story, okay? If it worked, it worked. Also, keep your pitches very short and succinct and direct. I don't need to see a pitch that's 300 words long. It's, you know, just, you know, get to the point, please. It has to be well written. It can't have any grammatical errors. That's just a given. Less is always more. And then I would say be very specific in your pitch. This is the objective of this story. These are, if not the specific industry professionals that you're going to interview, these are the kinds of companies and the kinds of job titles that you intend to interview for the story. And that's kind of what I would expect to see in a pitch, and that's really why I want to start with the pitch and then move from the pitch to the letter of introduction. Does that seem to make sense to you, Linda?
It does. Let me ask you a couple of things. One is, do you ever assign stories to people who write in and they just have so much great writing experience and clips and expertise in your area that you assign stories out to them, or is it always working from a pitch?
No, I assign stories to people who have great clips and things, but in fact, a couple of things that I should mention, I guess, here backing up is that while I'll read a pitch, I don't always buy a specific pitch. Again, I told you I had a pitch this morning and I responded to the woman. Well, actually, I'm not sure that I'm going to go with her pitch, but her pitch was good. It showed me that she's a really good writer. That's what I want to see, is how strong of a writer is a person. And when I looked at her website, I was able to see some of her background, so she had some background covering a topic that I want covered in the future, okay? So she would be a great candidate, okay? So, yes, she pitched me. She got my attention, but she probably went out there to the story she pitched, okay? Recently, I did something that I thought I'd never do. I contracted with a couple people who I found to be great writers who've primarily written blogs and consumer publications. They haven't really written in trades. But I was looking for great writers on a given area of expertise. And I was looking for someone with a different kind of voice, a fresh, creative voice for the trade industry. And I ended up finding those people writing in consumer pubs and writing blogs and talked to them, spent a lot of time, you know, talking back and forth, getting to know them. And they're really excited about starting to do some trade work as well because they see the value of getting to talk to the people in the industries that they communicate with on a consumer level. They're excited about, hey, we get to talk to the people who are actually making the decisions in this industry now. And I just wanted that kind of tone and voice, which is it's different. So sometimes bringing that that perspective is good. Does that answer your question at all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does. It does. Thank you. And I would like to just reiterate what you said about, I guess I want to say don't feel that a query is wasted. Don't feel I don't have any chance because this does happen where you were saying sometimes an editor can't use your idea but likes your writing and assigns you something else. So I don't want you to feel that all is lost. And I just, people are so sensitive to rejection, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That they're afraid to send out their pitches and they don't understand that there's, it's not just your idea you're pitching. You're pitching yourself as a writer for future articles, even if the idea doesn't fly.
And you're pitching your style. Your tone and your ability to craft words. That's what's really coming across there, okay? It's not just a particular story idea. And the other thing I would say is, the trends are all out there. We all see what trends are. And so I will get so many pitches that are almost identical because everyone wants to write about sustainability. Everyone wants to write about how restaurants are getting healthier menus, okay? There's a lot of similarity, and my job as an editor is to be able to give it some vision and to be able to think beyond what all the other stories are, okay? So pitch your ideas, but remember when you're pitching that it's your writing, not just your idea that's going to be selling you, okay?
Wow.
So it needs to be, creative, well-written, to the point, all of those kind of things. It's not easy. There's nothing easy about this, but it can be fun. And typically when I see something like that, what I do then is I'll initiate an email exchange with the writer. And if we move down the path and decide we're going to do a story assignment, then before I work with the writer the first time, I'll always have a phone conversation. I want to talk to the person. I want to know the person, a little bit before we actually start writing. And then, so you'll have, before a story, you'll have some emails. You'll have a phone conversation. You'll probably have another email. And then you'll have a contract spelling out what the story is. So it's, there's several steps there, okay?
Okay, great. Wow, this is great information. And you know what I think everybody would love to hear? This is always my favorite thing. I'd love to hear your pet peeves for what writers do that you don't like or what not to do.
Okay. Oh, gosh, I've got a list. And I've got that list from when I worked as a freelancer and when I worked now that I'm an one of the things that I think should just be a given, and that is, you don't have poor grammar. You don't have mistakes. It has to be well written. Another thing is, oh, goodness, please do not write in cliches. I do not want to read a story full of cliches. I don't want to read a story that is just a string of quotes. I don't care how brilliant the individuals quoted are. I want some story connecting all the dots, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to read quotes that say nothing. Even if you've managed to talk to the CEO of the largest company in that given industry, I want the quote that says something, that has some intelligent, worthwhile information for the readers. The other thing is, and here I'm afraid I sound a little bit like a mother or a teacher, but it's, please listen to the editor's instructions. There's very specific reasons if an editor says, please don't talk with this company in this story. There's a reason why. Maybe it's because that company's just been covered and profiled in the, previous issue. But, just follow the instructions and listen. As an editor, I give tremendous latitude to any writer that I work with. And so I usually have very few rules and requirements, but the ones that are there, they're there for a reason. And finally, I think the big thing is don't miss deadlines. And I say that, and in the next breath I say just communicate. Because everybody has interviews that get postponed. Everybody has something that comes up, and just communicate it. so that we can work together and hit the deadline we need to hit. But don't just miss a deadline and come back to me the next day and say, gee, I'm sorry I missed the deadline. I'll get it to you in a couple of days from now. That just doesn't fly. It works that way. So those would be my pet peeves. So,
okay. And what about the best practices?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, the best practices are sometimes just the flip side of the pet peeve. You know, communicate. You know, always communicate. I'm really big on emailing back and forth. It's the fastest, easiest way. I do have to say, personally, I prefer not to text because it just gets so cumbersome trying to text with everyone. I would prefer to email still. And then you also have a better record. The best practices are thinking fresh and knowing the subject. Always spell out acronyms in the stories. You know, you rely on the editor to decide when the industry is familiar enough with an acronym to just go with the acronym, but save the editor the time of having to go in and fill in the acronyms, fill them out, and then the editor can condense if he or she chooses to. Remember, the best practice is, you know, if an editor tells you the word count is 1,100 words, do 1,100 words. Don't do 1,400. Don't do 600. You know, hit that word count pretty close. At the end of your stories, include your sources so that if something needs to be confirmed, the editor has that on file. We had a story come up not long ago, published in a print issue, and it was on gun control. And then subsequently it published online with an opportunity for people to comment to it. And, of course, that's a very sensitive topic right now, so we had lots of comments. And some of the comments challenged the information in the story. So the easiest thing in the world was to point out that the information came from the NRA. And so the source was pretty credible on the gun laws. And so that we were able to do that, but the writer had given me the source. So just go ahead, put your sources in your stories. Save yourself the time of having to go back through your information. Save your editor the time of having to go back and ask for it. The other thing is when you're working with publications that ask for photography, it's best to just go ahead and either include the permission and the credit information for the photography or, again, include the contact information so that the editor or the art director can go back and get that and you don't have to go back after the fact and find all that out. Let's see. I'd ask for style requirements up front. Every publisher's style is a little bit different, and so try to find out what the style requirements are and meet the deadlines. That's the big thing, meet the deadlines.
Okay, great.
No,
and
not
I know you want to
much, are we?
Oh, sorry?
We aren't asking for much, are we?
Oh, no, not at all. But I know you wanted to wrap up with what trades need these days.
Oh, gosh. We just need we need some fresh perspectives, and we need people. Again, experts are great, but I want people who are inquisitive and curious and want to learn about the industry and want to learn about the subjects, because a lot of times those new perspectives are just more interesting, and that's a good thing too. So, you know, I think don't be afraid to go after something you haven't done before.
Awesome. Thank you. That was great information. I love writing for trade, so I love this call. Let us go and take some more questions. And Gabby had a really good one. She wanted to know whether trade typically supply interview sources, or is this another myth?
Let me make sure I understand the question. So if you come and say you're going to write a story and we assign you a story, am I going to tell you who to talk to, or do I expect you to go find out who to talk to? Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. Both. I will always work with a writer who's having problems nailing down an interview, okay? Typically, I have some ideas, especially if it's a story that I have assigned as opposed to the writer has pitched. I'll have pretty concrete ideas of the companies or individuals that I think should maybe be in that story, and I'll offer that list of suggestions and or requirements. So it's really a collaborative effort, I think. And when I worked as a freelancer, the best relationships I had with publishers and editors was always when it was a collaborative process. It, you know, I want to, you know, a lot of times, I know the editor who's doing our next cover story, she and I have gone back and forth quite a bit. I went to her with a list of, gee, these are the four or five people I'd love to see in the cover story. And she looked at it and said, well, yeah, I agree on these two, but what about these people? And we went back and forth, and I think we've come up with, you know, a dynamite cover story now, but it was very much a give-and-take collaborative process going through it. And I think that's the best way to work.
Okay. And Rachel has a question. Do you have any tips for looking ahead for getting good stories if you're not an expert in the field? So where do you look for the fresh ideas that haven't been done yet?
That's a good one. If I knew all the answers to that, then, gosh, I'd be very, very well off, I think. I think just familiarizing yourself, again, reading what you can about the industry and about the people in the industry. You know, if you're going into, if you're doing an industry that has a lot of public companies in it, okay, then one of the things you can do is you can go look at those companies' public annual reports and their investor relations reports and things, and typically buried somewhere in those very dry financial documents, you'll find a little bit of prediction about what the company might do in the next year. Not a lot of detail, but if you cobble together that kind of information from different companies and you identify a trend there, then that can take you down a path to explore. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. And I love this question because people always ask me this. What are typical rates that trade magazines pay per word or per article, if there is even such a thing as typical?
There is nothing that is typical.
Yeah.
Okay. And, gosh, I will tell you, some publishers pay by the word. Some publishers pay by the assignment or the page, and some by project. It varies, and I honestly can't tell you a number because that number varies based on the writer's experience. It varies. The rate will vary from one story to the next because of the complexity of the story. There isn't a number out there, okay? I will tell you, when you start out, you'll be on the really low end. You'll be disappointed starting out. But what you have to know is that if you stick with it, it can become a very, you know, worthwhile and rewarding career, and you can do very well if you
definitely
stick with it.
And if I could add, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. What were you saying?
I was just saying, if you stick with it and you work hard, you can end up doing very well. But it's,
okay,
the only reason to do it is if you love doing it. I don't think many of us get rich being a journalist or writing. But if you love doing it and if you have as much fun as I have doing it, then, you know, it's the money grows and that's a good thing, and it ends up being really good. So.
Well, yeah, and I wanted to add to that two things. One is that I've written for maybe 30 or more trades, and I've gotten anywhere from when I very first started out to maybe 5 or 10 cents a word to a dollar a word. So I would say the average for me has been 50 cents.
Okay.
And then also, one thing I find with writing for the trade versus the consumer pub is that the consumer pub might pay you $2, $2.50 a word, but they, because their editorial process is just so much more difficult to go through, that your hourly rate is not going to be as good as it looks and could actually be better with trade magazines, even if they pay less per word or per article.
That's an excellent point, yeah. So.
And Janita has, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, Janita has a question that I'm so glad she asked, because I meant to ask you before and I forgot. Is a pitch to a trade less involved than a pitch to a consumer magazine? Do I include quotes from experts I've interviewed? Do I line up sources ahead of time and so on?
I think you have to do what you're comfortable with. I've done it both ways as a freelancer, okay? I do think, because things are more competitive across the board, no matter what you're doing, I think it's whether you're pitching the pub, you know, the editor, or whether you're going after the interview, it's just a difficult process because everyone's time is so tight now. So I think it's difficult sometimes to have those interviews lined up before you have the story sold, okay? And it's a very fine line because you also don't want to tell an editor you can absolutely get an interview unless you absolutely know you can get that interview. I think as specific as you can be, though, it really benefits the pitch. So if you can say, I plan to talk to three of the following five companies, and I'm going after these titles, then that's pretty specific without locking you in on a specific individual.
Right. Okay, and Jane asked, are there certain trades or maybe I'll say types of trades that are more open to freelancers than others?
I think, and again, this is just my perspective, but I think in recent years, I'd say the last 3 to 5 years, trades have increasingly begun to rely on freelancers. And I think there's a couple of things driving that trend. One of them is the prevalence of content that's published on the website by everybody, okay? Print has shrunk to some extent, and digital has just, you know, ballooned. So a lot of times the staff writers are really spending every waking, breathing moment writing content for the website and doing some writing for the print. But then the print magazines are increasingly augmented and written by freelancers. So that that gives you a lot of opportunity across all trades. And I think what you'll see, again, when you go to, like, trade publications that may be published by a professional association or even maybe an agency, a government agency or a nonprofit organization or something, those particular stories may run over the byline of someone in the industry, but they'll be written oftentimes by a freelancer. So there's opportunity there, even though it may not be instantly apparent. Does that make sense?
Right, yes. And also, I got two similar questions, and we talked earlier, or you talked earlier, about how difficult it can be to find trades because they're not on newsstands and the necessity of maybe looking through their archives online. But two people have asked whether they can get free sample issues on request so that they can look at the actual print magazine.
You know, that's just going to be an individual availability kind of answer, I think. Again, you know, like I mentioned, the circulation is controlled, and everybody watch costs, so nobody prints a lot of excess copies of issues now. So, you know, it's a general rule. When I know I'm going to be working with a writer, I send a hard copy of the magazine. I want them to have it and see it and hold it and see what it is. But in general, I wouldn't just send print copies out to everyone who pitched me. I couldn't begin to do that. But I could give you a PDF, or I could give you a link to go online and look. Literally, you're looking at the story, you know, online exactly like it printed. So I think it's possible to look at it and read it. And a lot of publishers actually have their PDF of their entire issue to download online. And it's there. It's free. You just download it and read it. And it's the same as holding the print magazine. So.
Okay, thank you. And Cheryl has a question I'm glad she asked, because Carol, the owner of Danette and I, often recommend people write LOIs to trade magazines, and we've actually been moving more towards recommending what Carol calls a multi-pitch, what I call an LOI query hybrid, which is where you introduce yourself, but you do have a couple of ideas to pitch, so you're not just saying, here I am, you have something to offer. What Cheryl wants to know is, you know, you're saying that you should pitch. She says, is that just your magazine, or do you think that a pitch query instead of an LOI is becoming a trend in trade magazines? I'd love to know.
You know, I don't want to speak for everybody because I just have my own perspective, and having also written, again, as a freelancer and contributing editor, I just always found it more beneficial to go in the door with, this is a story idea, so that it instantly relates to the person reading the email. This is what I'd like to write for your publication. And then, by the way, this is my experience writing for B2Bs or my experience in your industry or whatever. But I think, for me, I lead with the story. And I know publishers often told me they liked that because they read it. And again, okay. Publishers and editors get so many pitches. We just can't go through them all. And so if I get a very nicely written email introducing an individual and the pitch is buried, 150, 300 words down into the email, I may not get that far.
Right, right. Okay, thank you for that information.
Main objective. So.
Okay, no, that's great. Thank you. And we have to start wrapping up, so I'm going to do one more question. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody's. We have a ton of questions. But this question is, how important is a writer's physical location? Do you prefer to work with local candidates?
Oh,
good question.
That is a brilliant question. I'm so glad the person asked that. It depends entirely on the publication. If you're writing for a regional or a local publication, then, yeah, location matters. But, sometimes the magazine that I edit, FSR, is national. And most of the B2B publications I've worked with have been national in scope. And I can tell you that one of the things I look for as an editor is geographic diversity, okay? And so another reason I responded today to a pitch that I got was because the person sending that pitch was from the Pacific Northwest, and I happen to want a writer in that area for another story, so I want to get to know someone out there, okay? And sometimes, sometimes you just get pockets of, I have 10 writers living in Chicago or 10 in Boston, and, gee, I'd love to have somebody in Phoenix. I'm just using those as hypotheticals, okay? But geographic location does matter. And another way that an emerging writer or a writer can break into a trade is look at a conference, look at an event happening in your area that you could go to and cover for a specific trade publication that is relevant to that trade, because every publisher is watching their travel budgets and not going to send you. If I can get a writer on the ground to cover an event and not have to spend the money to send somebody, that's great. So look at it that way, too. So, yes, location always matters.
Awesome. Thank you. That is great about the conferences. So we are going to wrap up now. It is about 4:02. So I want to thank everybody for being here, and especially thank you, Connie, for doing this. That was really wonderful.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it, and I really hope I haven't discouraged anyone. I hope I've encouraged everyone. It's a great career. Writing for trades are wonderful, and I hope I have a chance to work with before long. Okay, thank you so much, Linda.
You're very encouraging. Thank you very much. Bye, everyone.